The U.S.-Japan alliance is the foundation for not only our security in the Asia-Pacific region, but also for the region as a whole.
President Obama's recent trip to Japan was packed with photo ops, but for many Japanese, the moment that really mattered was a single soundbite.
That our treaty commitment to Japan's security is absolute, and Article 5 covers all territories under Japan's administration, including the Senkaku Islands.
The Senkaku Islands, tiny, uninhabited islets in the East China Sea, claimed by both Japan and China, have become a dangerous flashpoint. President Obama's terse statement reaffirming America's treaty obligations to protect the territory drew a strident response from Beijing, which announced it will stage joint military exercises with Russia near the sensitive area this month. Meanwhile, Obama's Senkaku Declaration was warmly welcomed by Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe.
Barack, together I hope we can build the best U.S.-Japan relationship ever.
But America's show of resolve did not reassure Yumiko Kato, a teacher in Tokyo.
I think it was just lip service. I'm worried about the ability of the Obama administration to deliver on its promises.
Japan has been used to the idea of having American military protection without really having to put Japanese lives on the line.
Andrew Horvat, a visiting professor at Tokyo's Josei International University, says the waning of U.S. wealth and power and influence in the Far East, a region it dominated throughout the Cold War era, has bred uncertainty among allies like Japan.
Are we going to be abandoned? Meaning the United States and China are now mutually so interdependent that the Japanese are asking themselves, what is the value of this American commitment to help us if America's hands are tied, if America's, national debt is in the hands of Chinese?
Obama's visit was supposed to allay those fears, putting weight behind the rhetoric of his so-called pivot to Asia, de-emphasizing the Mideast to focus on the world's most economically vibrant region. Washington says the pivot means two more Aegis destroyers will be sent to Japan by 2017. More subs, drones, and other surveillance and reconnaissance systems are expected to follow, underscoring U.S. resolve in a region alarmed by China's moves to expand its borders in the East and South China Seas. Michael Chuchik is an adjunct fellow at Temple University, Japan.
We have the world's second largest economy, China, rapidly militarizing at rates far above those of any of its neighbors and also of the United States. The ability of neighbors to keep up, particularly Japan, is limited.
Japan scrambled fighter jets over 800 times in the last year. That's the highest level since the Cold War. More than half of these dispatches were related to the Senkaku standoff, which escalated last year with China's provocative unilateral declaration of an air defense identification zone in the East China Sea. The move drew condemnation from U.S. Defense Chief Chuck Hagel in Beijing recently.
Every nation has a right to establish air defense zones, but not a right to do it unilaterally. That adds to tensions and eventually get to dangerous conflict.
But the pivot to Asia coincides with record low support among Americans for an active foreign policy. Putting U.S. troops in harm's way over a few rocks in the East China Sea, as in the Senkaku's dispute, might find even less favor. But scholar Andrew Horvat says that especially in a post-Crimea world, Washington is obliged to intervene.
You don't change boundaries unilaterally. You recognize boundaries that are internationally accepted. You don't suddenly declare an air defense identification zone and demand of absolutely everybody to call you before they go through there. And I think those principles are important.
Kuni Miyake, research director of the Cannon Institute for Global Studies, agrees that the U.S. can't afford to sit on the sidelines.
The bottom line is that this is for the mutual benefit, not only for us, but for the U.S. interest, for the United States to stay here. And if the United States do not respond to a situation, then probably that's when the United States decided to leave. I don't think that's going to be the case.
Even so, the rise of a more powerful China has conservative Prime Minister Shinzo Abe not satisfied just to sit by and rely on U.S. military commitments. In what he calls proactive pacifism, Abe is pushing for a constitutional amendment that would allow Japan to engage in collective defense. He rammed a tough new espionage law through Parliament and, for the first time in almost 50 years, relaxed Japan's ban on military exports to allow the sharing of defense technology with allies, all measures also long sought by Washington as a way of strengthening the alliance.
Exercising the right of collective self-defense is indispensable for Japan.
Narushige Michishita, Director of Security and International Studies at the National Graduate Institute for Policy Studies, says that Japan has no choice but to strengthen its defense ties with other countries in the region as a counterweight to China's growing military might.
This is not about the containment of China. The most important strategic objective that we have is to maintain the balance of power.
Maintaining that balance will prove complex in a region still lacking a shared vision, still deeply riven by its troubled history, 7 decades after the end of World War II. For America Abroad, I'm Lucy Kraft in Tokyo.